Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the program. Today I'm going to be reading from the March issue of Share International magazine, beginning with an article from the Point of View section titled Good News, We Can Bend the Corporations to Our Will. And this is by Robert C. Hinckley. And this starts with a quote from the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres in Davos on the 18th of January this year. We learned last week that certain fossil fuel producers were fully aware in the 1970s that their core product was baking the planet. And just like the tobacco industry, they rode roughshod over their own science. Some in big oil peddled the big lie. And like the tobacco industry, those responsible must be held to account. Liberal democracy is now close to failing, and one reason for this is that it has proved incapable of protecting the public interest from severe damage caused by big corporations. The next few years will tell whether it withers and dies or rights itself and survives. Democracy is based on the consent of the governed. Sometimes this can mean serving the wants and desires of the majority, but to survive long term, democracy must work for everyone. It can't leave a large minority behind, nor may it allow the public interest to be severely harmed. To ensure neither will occur, there must be a shared commitment among the governed to not cause great harm to each other. At least to this extent, citizens must commit to the obligations of citizenship, as well as take advantage of its rights. The bad news is that corporations, the world's most powerful citizens, are unburdened by any obligations of citizenship. Such obligations were eliminated in the late 1800s, where legislatures mistakenly decided they were unnecessary. And just a side note, this is written by a man in the US. In fairness, this was decades before big companies developed the technology and size capable of causing the severe harm we are experiencing today. Democracy recognises that some citizens will take advantage of the absence of law to pursue their own interests in ways that harm others. It assumes that before too much damage can occur, the elected representatives of the people will enact a new law which prevents such behaviour from continuing. Such laws contain the damage. In this way, democratic government fulfils its purpose to protect the public interest. However, this assumption is no longer valid. Through lobbying and financing the campaigns of politicians, big corporations and their trade associations have become proficient at delaying and frustrating the passage of new laws which would prevent them from continuing to destroy. Corporations weren't present when the American Founding Fathers drafted the US Constitution. The word corporation doesn't appear anywhere in the document. The concept of the modern corporation didn't arrive on the scene until nearly 100 years later, when its obligations to the public interest were eliminated. Try to imagine the drafting of the Constitution in 1787 if modern corporations were present. Had the founding fathers been able to foresee the developments in technology and the changes in corporations which would occur over the next 250 years, would they have originated the same form of government which now so inadequately protects the interests of individual Americans? It seems unlikely. That raises the question, what needs to change, democracy or the corporation? Changing democracy means changing the Constitution. That's not easy, and deciding how to change it is not obvious. The good news is that changing the corporation is much less difficult, and the necessary change is readily apparent. We can no longer assume corporate behaviour which severely harms the public interest can be brought under control by new laws passed by local, state, or national governments. Unlike the founding fathers, we now know better. Corporations are all formed under laws which can be amended relatively easily. No government-sponsored institution should be encouraged to continue causing severe harm. Obligations to the public interest, which were removed long ago, can be reinstated. The key to restoring the assumption upon which democracy is based is to impose on corporate directors a legal obligation to not severely harm the public interest. When a company discovers that it is causing severe harm by significantly contributing to the warming of the planet, killing millions of people each year or otherwise, its directors must have a legal duty to make it stop. The duty of directors in existing law to act in the best interests of the company must be amended to clarify that this obligation does not extend to circumstances where it will result in severe harm to the environment, human rights, the public health and safety, the dignity of employees, or the well-being of the communities in which the company operates. 19th century legislators passed laws which to this day encourage corporate directors to continue with their intentional destruction of the public interest. The way to correct this mistake is to balance the rights of corporations once again with at least the bare minimum obligations of citizenship, obligations upon which democracy depends. So that article was originally published on the commondreams.org website. And now for a very interesting letter to the editor. It's by a group member, and it's actually from some years ago. In fact, it was originally published in the Asian Times in 1983 and then published in Share International magazine. So it's a reprint, and it starts as follows. I was fortunate enough to hear Benjamin Krem's lecture on the reappearance of the world teacher, the Messiah or Krishna or the Mahdi, whom he refers to as Maitreya the Christ. No one who has come into the presence of such a being can ever forget it, and I would like your readers to know of my experience. I was trained as a philosopher at Bedford College in London. This training makes one tough-minded at the very least. No talks there of avatars, teachers, or divine beings. Further, I was born and raised in Colombia in South America, an intensely Catholic country, but my family is Jewish, and no one in my environment, whether Catholic or Jew, ever took the possibility of living messiahs or avatars seriously. Somehow, everything of importance in this respect had happened centuries ago, and a wall composed of rationalism, scepticism, and materialism separated us from great beings such as Krishna, Jesus, Buddha, or Muhammad, not to mention Moses. Over the years, and independently of my studies in Western philosophy, I became acquainted with the work of great Jewish and Christian mystics, as well as Hindu, Buddhist and Islamic thought, and some Chinese and Japanese philosophers. This extensive reading resulted mysteriously and unexpectedly in a deep sense of kinship with all these traditions and peoples. Secretly, I felt at one with all and began to see through surface sectarianism to the great unifying ideas, the love and the wisdom of God and the brotherhood of man. Through a study of Kabbalah and Sufism, I came to understand that the Messiah is an office, not an individual, and that, according to spiritual law, a realized master fulfills that office at the beginning of each astrologically marked alignment, which is a cycle of some 2,500 years. Sometimes he comes in the flesh, sometimes he manifests through a disciple. Thus now, at the beginning of the Aquarian Age, a Messiah awaits recognition. It is one thing to study theory, another to experience. I was inexplicably, or perhaps by the grace of God, drawn to Mr. Krem's announcement of the reappearance of the World Teacher, and together with my husband attended one of his lectures in April of last year, and again this was in 1983. You can imagine my amazement when I heard a master speak deeply moving words through Mr. Krem. He said, "I come to you as an elder brother, a lover of humanity, and urged us not to forsake the poor and needy to build with him a better world." Mr. Krem is Scottish, and through this Scottish voice I heard unmistakable Indian accents. Nothing in my background had ever prepared me for the manifestation of the Messiah of the age as an Asian. Further, Mr. Krem's rosy-cheeked face disappeared, and in its place, surrounded by a brilliant blaze of white light, there appeared a magnificent, unforgettable visage, smooth, golden-brown skin, large, dark, almond-shaped eyes set widely apart, a classic medium-sized nose and mouth, and high cheekbones. I had the additional impression that this was a tall, slim man in his mid-40s. What was very striking was the effect which this event had on me. As he looked at me, I felt literally a stream of energy from his eyes pouring towards me and activating the top of my head, the area between my eyebrows, and then my heart felt as if it were on fire. This energy had a quality. It was the purest love. The sweetness of the gaze of this great master is not to be found even in the face of a newborn babe. Once encountered, who can forget it? May my words fill you with hope, joy, and love for all mankind. And if I am asked, is this great master of all masters, the teacher alike of angels and of men in London, I can only say yes, dare to search for him, waste no time. And that was by a lady by the name of Patricia Pitchon, based in London in the UK. And there's a little note underneath that from the editor. Readers may recall that Patricia Pitchon was involved in helping to bring together a group of journalists and encouraging them to continue putting sufficient energy into a symbolic search for Maitreya that would have allowed him to come forward in response. According to Benjamin Krem, Maitreya has created a physical presence that will appeal to all who see him, not only to one particular national or ethnic group. Hope you enjoyed that letter. And we're going to finish with some questions to the editor. That this time it was Benjamin Krem, who, as you might know, passed away a few years ago. And there are a whole large source of such questions that haven't yet been published. And anyway, this first one is, in Britain, most people today are familiar with the crop circles, which some believed had been caused by UFOs, and Mr. Krem's answer. The crop circles are the most elaborate constructions, beautiful designs and shapes of infinite variety, of geometrical configurations which could only be made by super intelligences with some kind of super technology. They are made in precise proportions by people who we call the Space Brothers, whose work it is to help salvage Earth, mopping up, in accordance with karmic law, a great deal of the noxious nuclear radiation that we pour into our atmosphere, which is killing people. And the next question, are they from another planet? If you went to Venus or Mars or Jupiter, you would see nobody, but they are teeming with life. We just sent this little trolley, which was the Mars Pathfinder, to Mars to take pictures. They won't see anybody there, but there are more people there than on this planet. They are in etherical physical matter, which is finer than dense physical matter. These etheric planes of matter are the next phase of the material world to be researched and finally demonstrated by modern science. Then the etheric planes will become a reality, and more people will be born with the ability to see the etheric planes of matter. The spaceships are made by thought itself, simply by thinking. One day, partly through their agency, but mainly through the stimulus of Maitreya and the other masters living openly in the world, we too will make machinery which will create all the artifacts of our civilization. And the next question, I have to chuckle because this little trolley and the inhabitants of Mars watching this thing, it must be a joke to them. Well, of course, it is a joke. It makes them smile because it is so naive. There we are trying to find out if there's a semblance of life, a microscopic little germ of life like millions and millions of years ago. The people who come and create these crop circles in our fields are replicating on the physical plane the magnetic field, the energy of the magnetic field of our Earth, streams of force which crisscross and crisscross that form vortices. Each of these vortices is a bank of energy, and they are creating a replica of that, so we could use energy directly from our magnetic field, but off the physical plane. They make them in the crops because the crops are seasonal. They are there and they are not there. But they are not hovering saying, "We are here." They are giving a tangential kind of greeting. And if you have the eyes to see, you will see them. Yet another question. Wouldn't it be neat, now that we've got the trolley up there, as you call it, on Mars, if they'd send us a picture back, an unmistakable picture of someone waving at us like a human being we would recognise? You say, wouldn't that be neat? But that's not the way they think. It's not about being neat. It has to do with the law and what within the law they may do. They may not bang on our heads and say to us, "We are here and we are your neighbours and you want to know about us." There is such a thing as human free will, and neither the Masters nor the Space Brothers ever infringe our free will. They have made so many artifacts called crop circles that if we have any sense at all, any intelligence, we must realise these have been created by beings from a source other than our planet. So that series of questions and answers was originally taken from a 1997 radio show called Beyond Reason. And that's in Nashville in Tennessee. Got time for, I think, one or two more questions. On the 1st of February 2023, the Green Comet came very close to the Earth. After 50,000 years, it once again passed near the Earth. The American Space Agency, NASA, reported in early January that astronomers had seen the Green Comet for the first time in March 2022. Readers may be interested to read Benjamin Krem's information about comets. And this is regarding the comet Kahutek, 1982. Great synthesizing forces were released by this comet as it passed through our solar system, forces which will have a tremendous effect on this planet as on all the other planets. The solar system will progress enormously as a result of the inflow of this comet with its synthesizing energies. This is part of the initiatory process which is taking place. And comets carry matter and energies of differing frequencies from one part of the galaxy to another, creating thereby complex networks of energy throughout galactic space. Unfortunately, that is all we have time for. Thank you very much for listening. For more information, check out the website share-international.org. And wishing you all a lovely week.